on my black hat.
Okay, everybody's in. Bob, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Bob Barrett. I'm chairman of the Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District. I'd like to welcome everybody to today's meeting. It's July 21st at 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. We're going to move on to agenda item B. I see that there are potentially a couple members of the public. I see one gentleman and I see sort of somebody, another gentleman. So what I'd like to do, I'm assuming that your folks are attending the meeting with the intent to make some public comments. Now is your time. The way this works is I'll call on you and then ask you to identify yourself and state the relationship that you have with our district. And then you have 3 minutes to make a comment. We're not necessarily going to be responding to your comments or concerns, although we sort of typically allow some interchange between yourselves and the board. But we do commit, based on your appearance here, which we appreciate, to have follow-up conversations with staff, namely Roy, Watts, and Carrie, and or myself or other board members to follow up on your concerns. So we will make that commitment. I'm going to look at the gentleman on the right side of the screen. There's two gray-haired guys with their wives, I assume. So if you guys want to go ahead and
provide,
go ahead.
We've spoken to it. When to you?
He said he wanted to go to the man on the right-hand side of the screen.
Okay. Oh, are we up? So we're not Zoomers. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, we had a accidental leak, which resulted in an obsessive amount of water usage. We're customer 54, lot 11, Powder Mountain, or lot 7, Powder Mountain 11. So one of the houses on the mountain there.
Okay.
And I'm Joel Nelson. This is Donna Nelson. Hope everybody's doing good today. Nice to see you all. Our water company down here will give you one mistake.
Yeah.
And we talked to Carrie, who made us aware of the leak. But the leak went on for, it was just a running toilet. It went on for almost a month. We're talking 60,000 gallons of water. So the bill is going to be quite substantial. I would like to know if the board at some point, can grant a one-time exemption and
or mitigation or something.
Yeah, because we're not there 6 months of the year, and we only, we use about the required or the set amount of water during the winter, but, we use nothing in the summer unless we go out, So
yeah.
Anyway, that's what I'm asking the board to consider, a one-time grace.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Joel, and we'll consider that and discuss it internally, and our board will come to some conclusion based on your request. And I understand how these mistakes can happen. It could have been worse. I myself had an accident, for lack of a better term, and it cost me a lot of money. I didn't blow into the exceeding the allotment of water, but I ruined a lot of drywall by leaving my water on when I left town. And the pipe froze. So these things happen. We understand it, and we'll discuss it internally and get back with you. And I appreciate your coming to us and making a case. And we would welcome additional involvements in our district. We need.
Well, that's one thing we feel bad about is that we actually haven't done much, and so we're here now asking for help, but we haven't been involved. So that hopefully we'll change. We want to say we appreciate Carrie actually contacting Jen on the mountain. We were actually, in our own ignorance, not aware that we could monitor the water from here, and that's on us. We understand that, but we actually, would really appreciate if there's some kind of alarm or something that could be sent to us that, like I said, if it wasn't for Carrie actually monitoring it, because we don't have somebody to go in the house weekly or monthly. We used to, but no longer, unfortunately.
Okay.
Living on the mountain's not that easy. So, I'm done.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, let's move on to the other couple. gentleman that is on my right on the screen. Thank you and welcome.
Hi there. For some reason on our screen, we're in the middle, so we weren't sure about the right-hand location. My name is John Plunkett. I'm here with Barbara Coor. We own Lot 29 on Hartwood Drive, 7977 Hartwood. And we wanted to give you a little background. I think we're all trying to figure out how to work through on the one hand, the need for some irrigation, and on the other hand, the need to conserve water. We have one question, something that would help us a lot with these invoices is can somebody translate the quantities into gallons? We don't know what the quantity one represents, and when we see overuse of 37, we don't know what that means either. And the other question is, what is the normal allotment per house of water?
Carrie?
Absolutely. Okay, so you're allotted 5,000 gallons a month. Anything over the 5,000 is from 5,000 to 1,000 per thousands is a particular dollar amount. Anything over 10,000 is another dollar amount. So when you see that 35, that means it's 35,000 gallons above your allotment. And then whatever the dollar amount is, what is on that is basic. I think right now it's $24.99, anything over 10,000 gallons times the 35. That's what it is. And I'd be more than happy to translate that on the bill, but it's per thousands.
Carrie, excuse me, Mr. Chair, may I? I was unclear with that explanation. You said 35 and then 35,000 gallons. Did you mean to say 3,500 gallons?
No, 1,000. So in other words, for every 1,000 gallons used over 5,000 gallons, when I take the report, for every 5,000 gallons used, or every 1,000 over 5,000 is a dollar amount between 5,000 and 10,000. Anything over 10,000 gallons per 1,000 gallons, which would be, say, 35,000 gallons, equates to 35 times that dollar amount. So 35,000.
Okay.
So if he got a 35 on his report, he's 35,000 over the 5,000 allotted.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let me ask a question about that. Our house is still under construction, and will be for about another year. We're not living, so there is no domestic use of water. So at least the first 5,000 should be considered.
Okay, so Chair, if I may.
Yes.
Construction, you do have a meter. There's been a meter on your home for over a year. Even construction water is still used, is still billed for. So whether you're living there or not, once the meter is placed, any water usage that is done in that home, construction or not, is considered usage, and you will be billed for it.
Sure, I guess if I'm understanding this correctly, if we've used 35,000 gallons, the first 5,000 of that would have been for the normal domestic use. Well, at any rate, sure.
Yeah, there's no distinction between domestic use and irrigation use. Your property's metered, and water that's delivered to that property is billable.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure that the standard amount of 5,000 is being accounted for before we're considered as going overuse.
And it is. Either way, it is. That 35 is what was over. That's why it's considered. If you look at your bill, it gives you the standard bill. And then it also talks about the overage. The overage is above and beyond the 5,000 gallons.
Yeah. The quantity of water.
I think going forward, if there were a way to express that in gallons, it would just be much easier for we humans to understand.
Absolutely. I can change that on your invoice. That's not a problem.
Sure.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, just to continue a little bit, just as background, you know, Barbara and I, we received this building permit in 2017. And at that time, we were required to include an irrigation system. Summit Powder Mountain had that as part of their design guidelines. And in fact, the planning department had us add detailed pages about the irrigation into the permit. Our plan since then has been to, you know, provide some minimal irrigation during the first 2 years of planting to help us. We're trying to replant the native vegetation and add some additional new trees. And so we're trying to get them established over the first 2 years. We did the planting last year, and so we did initial watering last year, and we're in the middle of finishing our second year right now. We understand the water situation, of course. So going forward, we've also installed a cistern where we're collecting the runoff, and we intend to use that as much as possible for irrigation the next few months. So really, the critical issue for us right now is mainly these new trees. They have drip irrigation on them, and we need to provide at least some minimal drip irrigation to them, or they will die. So that's our main concern, is to make sure that the trees still receive some water before this before we go into this coming winter. But by then we think everything will be well established. We don't anticipate needing to irrigate beyond this initial 2-year period.
It's been expensive, but we're just trying to do the right thing here as far as native planting.
Well, thank you for your comments. The issues surrounding irrigation within our district are fairly complicated. We have an agenda item that I think that you should stick around and watch. I can tell you that the district's policy is that we don't allow irrigation. We've been tolerant of folks that like yourselves that want to establish plans, and we've allowed that to happen, but we've seen dramatic overuse of precious water resources under that rubric and a lack of responsiveness to price point signals. So we appreciate your interaction with us, and we'll work with you to make sure that we can meet your needs to establish your vegetation while at the same time conserving a precious resource that we have stewardship on. So we'll loop back around, and you're welcome to stick around, because we're going to be talking about this exact issue hopefully sooner than later in our agenda.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate your attendance, sir, and we look forward to you becoming part of our HUI. Thank you. So, well, let's go ahead. I see no other public members in attendance, so let's go ahead now and move on to item C, which is an audit. Erin Winterton. Carrie, if she's not here, can you provide us some backdrop on what's been going on with our audit and our compliance with the state right now relative to audit filing?
Okay, so our 2021 audit is done by Erin through a CPA firm. And generally, the audit has to be done and posted to the public website by June. For some unforeseen reason, I'm not quite sure why we haven't got it done yet. I've been in contact with her. She's waiting on some information that has been sent to her, and I haven't talked to her in a couple of weeks to find out what is going on. But when I finally get an answer, she can come and present. I will have her on next month's board meeting or a board agenda. She's going to have it done by then, one way or the other, to be in state's compliance.
So we'll be tabling item C, which is the 2021 audit report, and moving on to item number D, which is approval of consent items. Item number one, request for approval of the minutes for the meeting held on June 9th, 2022. Board members, you know there's a new way to get your board packets. So does anybody have any questions or issues surrounding the published preliminary minutes from the June 9th, 2022 meeting? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
So we approve the minutes of the meeting held on June 9th, 2022.
Second. Jim Harvey beat you to it, Rob. All in favor? Okay, we're unanimous on approval of consent item number one. Item number D2, authorization for transfer $7,205.26 from the PTIF for the semi-annual tax disbursements to the general account. Gary, just a little, tell us what this is. I think we all know, but just briefly.
Absolutely. Weber County distributes into our PTIF account monthly the taxes that they collect from us. And then semi-annually, because it's used for our O&M fund, I take the dollar amounts that were deposited from January to June and transfer into the general account. And then from July to December, once everything's been deposited, come January, we'll do it again. But this is just the dollar amounts that Weber County has submitted to us for their tax collection.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions of Carrie about this particular agenda item? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Yes, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and make that transfer.
Do I hear a second? Bob Bingham. All in favor? We're unanimous again. Okay, now let's move on to item number E, business items. Number one, number three, manager's report. This is Roy Watts. Roy.
Yeah, so as far as our water system goes, we were, of course, done trying to wrap up the Pizzell Springs Kobe well project and lift stations. And Ben Brad could jump on any part of, on the engineering part of it. But of course, many of you know the pump house one's pretty much wrapped up. We're working on the Kobe well and just getting some pump testing done. The contractor, Rod Mund, is up there right now with some equipment. He's going to move in and do some pumping, and Brad will work with him on that. And the guys were able to get the wellhead's cover taken off so that they can get to the components a little bit easier as he puts all the equipment on there he needs to. So we'll see how that turns out. As we mentioned, and I think previously, we have taken another water test out of the spring, and it came back cleaner. So as time's going on, the spring is doing much better. Coliform, I think there's still some coliform showing up, but we're clean beyond that. So anyway, we're encouraged by that and the flows that are still there at the spring. Pump house two, they've got most of that completed. Pump house three, they're waiting to still do the demo on it. We've been struggling getting Rocky Mountain Power to shut that power off. There's 2 meters there. 1 meter is for Summit Powder Mountain and their yard light. It's actually in the same building, and it's there historically. And then the other meter is ours. So we're scheduled to have those turned off, and the contractor won't do anything until that power is off. Pump house four, I think Brad, they have the pump cans in and they're getting ready to pour the floors on it. And so shouldn't be too long before they start framing on that building. Pump house five, they've got the foundation poured, of course, and the retaining walls are up. I think there's a little bit of a blowout on one part right next to the building, which should be fixable. I talked to Brad about that, but beyond that, that's moving along very nicely also. Allied Construction completed the main lines that were being installed from top of the mound to the bottom, and they made those connections. And then again, Brad, maybe if there's any more detail on those parts in a second, can talk about those. But anyway, so things are moving along nicely. We're encouraged by the timing. The contractor's moving as fast as he possibly can. We should have things in and done this season, have a system up and running. As far as the sewer system goes, it's minimal usage on the mountain, and guys have gotten most all their equipment they need to put their their electric fencing on the sewer lagoons. In fact, next week I told them I'd go down and help one of them while the other one's up on the mountain chasing after the projects. We'll try and get that electric fence up and running. That's pretty much an overview on it. We did complete the rebuild of the lift station right there off of Powder Mountain Road, right next to the Kobabe's house. And so that it was an old and a faulty lift station, single pump in it, now has the dual pumps and it's up and running. We did have a backup problem there with the contractor when they were doing their work. Kerry jumped on that, was able to get it backed up a little bit into one of the houses. She was able to get that cleaned up, and I believe everything's happy. Everybody's happy and things are going good, but it's much better now, much safer. That'll be a much better lift station. At some point, it would be nice to eliminate those. But anyway, Brad, is there anything else as far as the construction projects and things that are going on that you want to report on?
Like I say, Allied's done. Any remaining piping that we'll do, we'll just contract with MJM, and most of that's just incidental with the pump stations. We're working on a new alignment of our line going around the pump station 5, going around the tank, and we're going to be using the existing piping that we have up on the mountain. There's a whole bunch of DR13 HDP pipe just sitting there at the top of that. Which lift is that, Roy? Anyway, they've got a yard up there full of probably a mile of pipe just sitting there in the sun, and we might as well use it.
Yeah, nice thing, Ed, by the way, too, I just wanted to report, we talked to Rory from Powder Mountain Development, and he said that he would be willing to let us use that pipe. It was something they had left over from projects. And I just said, tell the board, let us know that we're trying to do what we can to work with them, and Merry Christmas.
All right.
So we appreciate their help. And by the way, they've all been great to work with, good team. Nate's been great to work with, is operating the resort projects, and has been involved with us on most everything that's going on. Rory's been exceptional, and we're looking forward to further meetings with them and resolving other issues up there and conveyance and other things that need to be taken care of. But it's good team right now.
Right.
Good questions. Roy, you said something about a blowout on Pump House 5. Yeah. I didn't catch what that was, but it got my attention.
It's probably a wild term to use. It basically, they ran out of cement, and on one of the pores next to the doorway, this is where the walls are going to meet up.
Yeah.
And they just weren't able to complete that. So okay. Brad has worked with them. They'll probably dowel in some... put some dowels in and finish that little piece of that pour. It left a kind of a low spot or a swell right there below the door, but they just need to finish that off and then get it nice and flat and graded properly on that part of the wall.
We'll just down some rebar and do a monolithic pour. So actually the slab, and for the slab, that will then wrap it down and then we'll put some cold joint material on that. It'll be just fine.
The other question, Roy, was if we start pumping in November, do we have all the approvals from the state locked and cocked? Are we good to go?
Yeah, but Brad's working on all of
them. We are working on all those. Yep.
Hopefully we should be. I don't know. Brad will just have to be the one to explain that to you, because I know he's working on all that reporting with the state.
Yeah, I just got an update from them last week of everything that we've got pending, so we're working on that, Ron.
Okay, so we're going to chlorinate and move the water up the hill, and we'll be good to go when the contractor finishes in November.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thank you.
Roy, can you tell us a little bit about the progress at Covade Well itself currently? Where are we at the well?
So,
Rod Mund is there today to start that pumping. MJM is going to lift the top off with their backhoe, and then he's going to start a test pump. He's going to do a 24-hour test pump and stress it, and we'll monitor the drawdown during that time, and then I'll pull that data and do some type curves and show what the actual safe yield is of that well.
Will you test that at the same time for the iron bacteria?
Absolutely. We're going to look at iron bacteria. We're going to look at turbidity. We're going to be looking, we're pulling 100 gallons a minute, and it's, milky, sandy water. We'll be looking at all that.
Thanks.
Anybody else have it, Roy? Is that your report?
Yeah, that's all, Bob.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions for Roy, any board members? Well, thank you, Roy. Let's go ahead and talk about item E, number 4, water conservation policy enforcement. I can provide some of the history here on this. There's been, the developer has promulgated design guidelines that state quite clearly the potential customers, end users, people they sell lots to, that they are allowed and apparently required to put in irrigation system if they're allowed a certain grace period for vegetative establishment and those sorts of things. And we've been aware of those guidelines for quite a while, actually. And for lack of a better historical perspective, we've allowed that to occur despite the fact that within our own guidelines, outdoor irrigation is strictly prohibited. And importantly, when we applied for force reduction, we specified that no outdoor irrigation would be permitted at all. So where this comes to the forefront, at least in my mind, is that we've had individuals who have used a lot of water for outdoor irrigation. So it's become untenable, the amount of water that's being used by individuals to establish their vegetation. It impacts on our ability to safely yield, deliver the amount of water that we would consider safe. So I'm just going to provide that backdrop and then open it up for discussion. Roy, your perspective, and then other board members' perspectives on what we need to do here. And Carrie, I'll loop back around after Roy speaks and ask you to define our current policy, our current codified policies on this matter. So Roy, what are you thinking on this?
Well, so there's no question that based on the limited amount of water in the wells that we have at the top of the mountain and the type of aquifers that we draw from, that it's a necessary policy to have in order to protect the community and fire protection and other things that are critical. We do need the residents to be able to establish vegetation around their properties, one for aesthetics, the other is for the value of the properties, the other is, of course, they can help to establish the type of plants that help protect their homes in any event there was some type of a fire up there also. And so we're absolutely, it makes sense to work with them on those first couple of years to get this vegetation reestablished after they do the construction on their homes. And we should be okay with that. There's enough water for that if they're careful. I think if someone were to try and establish elaborate lawns and those kind of things, that would be hard. And drip watering is the wisest way to go. But and it'll be better once we get the other well up and running so that there is, and our other sources up there from the springs to make sure there's backup. But again, the type of wells that we have, they're pretty limited in how they can be pumped. And so as the community continues to grow on the mountain and it becomes bigger, more developing with the customer use and trying to establish that vegetation, it just stresses the wells and the aquifers in order to maintain it. So that's why there can never be irrigation on top of the mountain. It's the type of place you live or you have your properties in, and the weather's cool enough that you shouldn't have to have too much irrigation up there. So I think where we're headed with it's all good, and the people seem to understand that extensive vegetation is, and becoming too elaborate is probably overkill. I think good communication with the community up there on what we're all trying to do is critical, so that everybody understands how to utilize the water systems. And I think it's just that. The other part of it, of course, is good communication with the developer to make sure that the right information gets out on these brand new homes, and that we're watching that through the development process through the county. We talked about talking with the county also, again, their planners, to make sure that the right information is being disseminated to these developments that are going in, so that the customers and the developers and the design engineers are all have the right information to make sure that the right infrastructure gets put in. Plus, it doesn't cost the homeowners a lot of money to put in something that they can't use.
Okay, thanks, Roy. Carrie, what's our current policy?
Our current policy with the rules and regulations are, and I'm just looking at it now so that I can state it, but in section 21, water conservation measures and restrictions, it basically says that there is no irrigation and that we can allot a fine, administrative fine, if you're caught not abiding by the rules and regulations. It's in our rules. It's okay. Been that way for since 2018.
And it's discretionary on a case-by-case basis?
It doesn't say anything about the case-by-case. It's basically there's no irrigation.
It is. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is just get the individual board's sentiment and comments on this, and we'll start with Jim Harvey. Jim?
I know Weber Basin allows, with no time limit and no restrictions, drip irrigation. inasmuch as we've got a fee schedule above and beyond 5,000, I believe it allows the residents or the homeowners to have to be able to make a decision what's best for their property. Whether they choose to allow the concrete truck to spray out their trucks, or the guys to fill their trucks for water, watering the road, or whether they choose the drip irrigation to grow vegetation around their house, let them govern themselves and have them have that. I don't have a problem if we modify our existing plan to allow drip irrigation only. If they choose to do some kind of a pop-up spray or something for lawns, that's not a drip irrigation. That puts out a lot more money, but I would be very much in favor of a drip irrigation type of an opportunity for people up there. I think that's good, and it also helps hold hills. There's a lot of pluses to regrowing vegetation. I like the comments from the public today. I thought they were well presented, both of them. And so that's my two cents on that.
Thank you, Jim. Ron Wilson.
I'm opposed to outdoor irrigation 100% until Summit brings Bloomington online. We're stuck with one well right now. We were potentially in an extremist position last winter as we were pumping down. And if that one well gives out, we're going to be dead in the water, so to speak. but until they bring Bloomington online, I can't support it, Bob.
Okay. Rob Cabot, your thoughts? You're muted, Rob.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. I think Jim and Ron are both right. I think some kind of irrigation should be allowed in limited quantities, in such things as drip irrigation that makes an effort to conserve. But I think as it stands now with our limited well access that we've got going on, we've got to, you know, stick with our policy. I think we're making a good balance between allowing some landowners to get some vegetation started and sort of, you know, putting a blind eye to that. But I think it's something we got to review in the future when we got fully, you know, up and going on these other two wells.
Okay. Bob Bingham.
Yeah. So, you know, our community, as people are building their homes, you know, just the homes around us, we've had, you know, people who've been really good, and their contractor has not disturbed the building envelope, and they have far less vegetation to have to replant or try to restart. And then there's some that just blew through an entire, you know, not just their property, but their adjacent properties as they brought in their bulldozers and done everything. So some of the sites really require quite a bit more, I guess, remediation to get started again. And this stuff is, a lot of the vegetation up on the mountain is old. It takes a long, long time for this stuff to grow back. It's not just, the first things that come back are the weeds, right? And then they crowd out all the native species. And so it does take some time. And we've had our own, you know, we planted some aspens and they didn't take, and we were trying to hand water a little bit, knowing that, you know, we were using culinary water to water, so we tried not to do that, and well, those trees are dead, and they're not coming back, and so we're gonna have to pull them down or rip them out or just cut them off. So I understand the concerns about people wanting to get started again. I think what John and Barbara have done with the cistern is a really great idea. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should, as a district, encourage people to go, you know, capture rainwater, put that rainwater into a drip. I think the idea of using sprinkler heads and just dispersing that stuff into the air when it, you know, we have 0% humidity in Utah, it basically just goes, it just never even hits the ground, I don't think. I think it comes out of the sprinkler and it just evaporates into the, you know, into the ether. So the idea of using drip would be a good idea for the district to, you know, so if we come up with maybe a policy going forward, I think it would be, you know, drip for a year or two, and then maybe continue if it's not going through 35,000 gallons. That's excessive. And I don't know where our record is, by the way. I think there's someone that actually beat that. But, you know, we should try to probably encourage those kinds of systems going forward.
Thank you, Bob. I agree with your comments, honestly. And I think it's a communication piece for us. We need to talk to the developer and say, listen, your guidelines are creating issues. And we need to bring you on board with revising those communications. Because that's all these folks are going off of. They don't know that there's additional regulatory or issues behind that. And so I appreciate everybody's comments. And what I think we need to do is to revisit this issue in a subsequent work session. And Bob, you have a really good feel for it. So if you can put together some bullet points that would outline your concerns and we can review that, I think we can drill down on a revised policy and satisfy our responsibilities. Ron, you have an additional comment?
Yeah, I do, Bob. Just to give you some perspective, the people in the valley that work, that have Wolf Creek irrigation water, okay, where they have culinary and irrigation water. The goal for irrigation down here that Wolf Creek irrigation or Wolf Creek Water and Sewers establishes 15,000 gallons. I mean, we're in the desert here, guys, and when we start pumping all that water, when we're pumping it in the mountain, this is what we're using for irrigation down in the valley is creek water that's flowing down into ponds, and they're limiting everyone to 15,000 gallons. So that gives you some perspective of what is considered reasonable use.
Thank you. Well, I'm satisfied that we've had a reasonable discussion, and we appreciate our customer bringing additional light on this issue, and we're going to not let this go. So, Bob, you spoke most cogently, so can you provide us some additional bullet points? That'll teach you. And let's just move forward, unless anybody else has any pressing, enlightening comments relative to this issue. Hearing none, let's move on to the financial second quarter report. So, Carrie and Rob Cabot, please. Carrie, lead out.
All right. I'm sure in your board packet, you guys have noticed that we had our budgets, we had our profit and loss. Rob and I have gone over everything. There were no questions. Ron came down and did his audit on the bank statements. Amy has updated everything. So, this is current as of last week. We're right on schedule for our budget. We're right on, with the exception of one item, and we know which item that is for the engineering. We have to handle that with the bond. But as far as our profit and loss and as far as our budgets, we're right on task. Receivables, liens have been placed. And like I said, everything was reviewed by Rob and Ron. So are there any questions? I mean, I don't know how much you guys have actually looked at them, but...
I've looked at it and I don't have any questions. Rob?
Nope. All looks good. I have no concerns.
Ron, I know that you've taken additional looks at this stuff. What are you thinking here?
Well, I don't have any concerns about the financial report. I'm looking at impact fees coming in, and if everything moves like it's projected, we're going to probably have some good impact fees coming in, and perhaps we're going to be able to move money that is owed to the sewer side of the house and impact from the water side, because it's looking pretty good, and that would help us balance those books. But as far as the reports and everything else, I don't have any concerns. I would just ask Brad if he is getting any change orders from the contractor that we need to be aware of.
Currently, we don't have any change orders to address with the board.
Okay. Are we going to talk about task order 9, I guess, or task number 9? Is that later?
We're actually talking about the financials at this point. It's the next
okay. Time. I'm sorry. Then I'm done.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions, concerns, comments about item 5, financials? Hearing none, let's move on to item six, Gilson Engineering Task Number 9. Really tell us what this is about, and Brad, of course, chip in.
Okay.
Tell us what you need here, guys.
Yeah, so as we worked through the project, there was more extensive inspection that needed to be done, and Brad will have you to talk a little more about this also, but there in the engineering, there's a limited amount of inspection and or managing of the projects that they typically will do on those. And we know that we needed more time spent on the mountain to make sure that all of what was going on up there once was, we had an engineer up there looking at things, not just our staff, because our staff's not qualified to do that. And so Brad provided a separate work order that allowed us a place to track that, and an expense for him to track it in, about $64,000. And that should cover most of the season and the projects, if I remember right, Brad. But it's essential to have project management, some critical on these kind of things. There's stuff going on every single day up there. Contractors are questioning things, needing help, needing direction. And you about have to have a guy that's filling out the reports, making sure there's good records in case there's litigation or there's a problem, it's a failure somewhere, that we've got a qualified person that's making those, keeping those logs and records and photographs and taking GPS readings and all the things that need to be done to make sure you've got a good completed project. And so this is what they're providing us that. And again, so it's limited in your, in the, on the contractor's end, what he's going to do. This is an engineering piece that needed to be added in the project to make sure that we get a good finished project.
Why wasn't this budgeted for during the initial bond review and budgeting process?
I think when we first started looking into it, we felt that there was enough to cover it. And talking with Brad, he said that there was, that they just had a limited amount of review that they did, and we felt that it was not that limited amount of time up there was inadequate to do the correct inspections and the record keeping and everything. So I don't know, Brad, if you can maybe talk that on how you typically do projects and the amount of time you spend on them, but this is something that we felt was needed.
We had an initial allocation for some time last summer that we used, and through the contractor extending it into the whole nother year is part of that. And then a lot of this involves all coordination with the SCADA system and getting all the telemetry coordinated so that we're getting all our pressures and hydraulics tied together with all his various subs. He doesn't just have one entity just doing everything all at once. He's got a lot of moving pieces that we're trying to put together.
Ron?
I went back and looked at some of the task orders, and there's about $60,000 in each of the task orders for inspections and supervision. So I don't know. I feel like I'm being double dipped here. That's how I feel. I don't know that that's the case, but I'm a little concerned about it, Bob, to tell you the truth, because if you go back and look at the task orders, take a look at them. There's inspections and, you know, trips all planned into it. I mean, I don't. Do we need someone there 24/7 or every day? I mean, that's what we have a staff for, and we got two guys plus Roy. And then with the engineer coming up periodically, what we've already funded, I'm wondering if that's not enough. If it needs to, pictures need to be taken, why can't our staff take pictures? I'm a little bit concerned, because of cost overruns here.
Yeah, so still again, even though we understand what's going on up to some extent as staff, that there are calls that are made on whatever's going on up there, again, more regularly than just once in a while. And project management requires this specific to more of an engineer, not just our staff. And so
again, this is to make sure that that's being handled properly.
I just saw it was spoken in the original task orders, Roy. The original task orders that I saw had all that in there, and now I feel like, this is just me personally, I feel like we're getting hit again for something that we already had thought about, planned for, and approved.
Mm-hmm. I think those original task orders too, Brad, there was never intended to be the amount of time that should be spent on these projects.
We originally budgeted probably a quarter of what industry standard requires, because as you remember back when we were talking, we're trying to make this cost effective. We were trying to make our budgets work and make this as cheap and inexpensive as possible. And so we put some very low numbers up there and I mean, we could just stop going up there. But I spent 2.5 hours on the phone with the contractor just this morning coordinating details, and better part of this whole week I've been just coordinating details with the contractor, issues with rocking out power, issues with thrust blocking, issues with SCADA, coordinating things with his electrician on tie-ins and how he wants the structural issues with their demo and how they construct the new building, what connections to use and things like that. So we've been awfully busy working with the contractor.
Typically on a project, Brad, you guys will have a certain amount in there for engineering. What does that all cover every time whenever we have it? Is it for strictly engineering? Does it cover the project management in the end and all the final pieces, you know, surveying and all the other things that might need to be done?
Engineers usually give me a fixed amount for the initial design. And then once the design's put out to bid and the contractor starts, the construction management's industry standard, that can vary between 7-10% of the cost of a job. And we're well below that industry standard on this, and that's usually hourly, because it really depends on the contractor and who's doing what type of work are you doing, and you know, is it just like a previous project or is it something new? This one has a lot of complexity to it. There's a lot of moving pieces.
Is there money in the bond right now, Roy? I know there was some anticipated cost savings at Pump House 5 based on some redesign work.
Yes, we anticipate that there'd be enough to cover it.
What does everybody else think? Bob Bingham, then Rob, then Jim.
I mean, I remember we were going to put a couple tough sheds out there and we were going to use some garden hoses and pump this stuff up to the top. So, you know, we're a little further along than that, I think, now. But I don't know if you know, Brad, when you did your best guess on, you know, putting those everything together, it was kind of you know, we were all going to live with those numbers and we were going to try to get this project done. So, you know, yeah, there's going to be some work and you're going to be taking some calls now because things are starting to finalize on, you know, all the parts and pieces getting put in. But that was kind of the deal going in. So,
So, Brad, do you think that is it fair to say that it's taking you a lot more time in supervising than you built into the original pricing?
Our contractor needs a lot more guidance and direction now. He needs a lot of help.
So is it just unforeseen extra time based on this contractor, you know, needing a bit more assistance and oversight? Okay.
It's not so much what's foreseen. It's some contractors need a lot of help. Some projects need a lot of coordination. And most construction management contracts are hourly. I don't know. I think you'd have a hard time finding somebody in the industry that would go, yeah, I'm going to spend exactly X thousand dollars on construction management. If they did, they probably would want to hire him because it all depends on what's happening. are running into, issues with concrete shortages, and we're coming up with new mix designs, and we're dealing with, unknowns in the ground as they're excavating, and you just don't know those things. Nobody can anticipate that.
Yeah, sure. No, I appreciate that, and I also appreciate that we're coming in, below industry standards. That's fine. That's great. I think the sticking point is that it wasn't in the original, pricing to cover this. But I get it, that we didn't know this particular contractor that's going to take a lot of, supervision. And by no means am I suggesting or would agree with the idea of you not supervising these guys, right? Because that could be disastrous. So we need to keep going. My only recommendation to you is do what's necessary and just keep a mindset of trying to rein it in. That's all. Just keep going. And good job. Thank you for putting in your time. I mean, you too had not scheduled this amount of time. So I appreciate you, doing that for us, rather than just throwing up your hands and saying, well, I can't do this. And it's going to have to be done by somebody else. So
I appreciate that. Thanks, Rob.
Jim, what are your thoughts? And then Ron, we'll get back to you.
I appreciate what's been said, but I don't have any more to add to this conversation.
Ron?
No, Bob, I've put in a lot more hours than I originally intended to do on this board, and I'm spending time that I never thought I would, so how about a raise for me, too?
No way.
I never envisioned it.
No way.
I never envisioned putting in this kind of time when I joined this board. No way. No way at all.
I'm going to take the table decision making on this one. I myself need to look at the original proposals. I have not done that. And I need to do that. And we need to have further time to analyze this in terms of the importance of approving additional costs on the projects that's been fraught with what I think are cost overruns out of the gate. And we all know why that happened, but this just feels like we need to take a careful look at this point, particularly given the progress we've made. So we're going to take a look at those items. Ron, if you or Carrie can forward that stuff to our board so that we can have additional deliberations on Tuesday. I think that's what we need to do.
Sure.
Okay. So let's move on to ARPA funding update. Where do we start? Roy, why don't you just tell us about the meeting, the county meeting a couple days ago? This has been an everyday thing for me too, guys. Ron, I'm putting in a lot more time than I thought as well. But Roy, why don't you just provide some synopsis, and then we're fortunate to have Jim here because he ran the meeting. So tell us what's going on with ARPA funding.
Well, each of the us and Wolf Creek Water Sewer Improvement District have been making some presentations, trying to tap into some of that money. The other is to help the county fix some of the challenges that they face, and fixing the sewer problems up there in the Upper Ogden Valley. There's no question that any part of that money could benefit both of these entities by helping them to further their projects along. Wolf Creek has been working with John Lewis and Shane, and the two developers, primarily one of the bigger developers in the Upper Ogden Valley, and for the Osprey and bridges and some of the Wolf Creek area and a few other things. And to develop water and sewer systems, and to move those resources to a place where the effluent can be reused. And initially, as some of you have heard, Wolf Creek Water and Sewer Improvement District had gotten to a point with this developer where they were kind of stonewalling them a little bit. I think as the district came along and said that we'd be glad to help out the situation and help with other treatment facilities of Nordic and other places, it seemed to somehow move things. Wolf Creek has taken a different approach, and the developer has encouraged that he's now moving along much better than he was before. I compliment our board for being willing to step up to the plate and help and help out. The idea of the commissioners, and Jim, I know you'll add to this, but they want to do the best they can to maximize the amount of money that they have and the ARPA funding to cover the as much of the problem up there as they possibly can. And with the two entities, Wolf Creek would take care of everything probably south of the, for the most part, south of the road coming off of the divide, up the Ogden Divide. And then Powder Mountain would take care of whatever is currently in our district boundary, as well as covering some of the or as much as we can of the valley going to the north. So we've made those presentations. With the most recent one, Brad had prepared a diagram that he had shown the board of what we think we'll do. It's basically what we talked about before. We'll cover the north end of the valley. We thought we might take care of more of what John Lewis and Shane was doing, but Wolf Creek has worked, he and Wolf Creek Water and Sewer worked out those differences, and you know, it seems to be an intelligent plan to take care of the water and sewer needs for the lower part of the Upper Ogden Valley. And so at that point now, the district probably needs to regroup and to make sure that whatever we're gonna do is going to align with Wolf Creek and cover our own needs and cover the needs of the county. My feeling on the whole thing is that the funds definitely need to be split if there's a certain block of money. Covering for Wolf Creek to do what they're doing, they're covering what's needed on the lower south half of the valley. But if the district doesn't move ahead with what it had suggested the county would do, then you have the whole upper end of the valley that's left without a plan, and you're still contaminating the water sources up there. So we've got to have a plan forward, and it's critical for the district to have some help with the ARPA funding, because you know, we're seeing our challenges just to financially survive, and to think we're going to lead out with engineering and legal costs and everything is going to be related to that, and treatment plants and trunk lines and all of that to help start this project moving along to cover the needs of the Upper Ogden Valley and the county's needs. We need the assistance of the ARPA funds to help, if nothing else, just seed money. There's probably $10 million worth of improvements that need to go in. And it's a big lift for the district and you as board members and our staff to take this on, but you've committed to some extent to do that, to help out on the project or on these needs. So again, we're happy with the way things went with his last presentation. I thought Miranda did a great job, and they working well with the developer. The district also has been working with John Lewis, and we're probably, he wants us to help him out with some of the stuff that he's doing. He's got a few hundred units that he needs some help on, and wanting to put some infrastructure in that could be integrated with what we're planning on doing in the future. And some other developments he's got coming along in the Liberty area, and that all leads towards what Brad had presented in his presentation, that it all starts to align with what we said. We'll take care of that northern end. What's critical in this going forward, Jim, is that is the determination or the boundary declaration for the future will be important for the district, because it'll help us to master plan to, and also to be able to encourage developers to get ready to hook on to the trunk lines and things that we'll be possibly planning for. The other part of this is that the customer base that we would get is what's going to help pay for the infrastructure, whether John puts it in or it's part of what we put in. That becomes a revenue stream that helps to cover what we'll do, but again, I think in the end, basically what we said we were going to do and what Wolf Creek said they're going to do is about the way this is playing out right now. The district will take care of the upper end of the valley, and Wolf Creek would take care of that lower end. So I don't know. a lot of rambling, but there's lots gone on, and it seems to be pretty dynamic and kind of a moving target a little bit. But I think we're at a point now, seeing that, that Wolf Creek has a pretty solid path forward, as well as working with the developers. I think the district can take a pretty solid look at what, where we're going to do. Again, the critical thing is really the money. We just do not have the money to go out and do a lot of stuff to help fix this problem. No, Jim,
you're on mute.
You want me to
talk more about our specific intended strategies in closed session? Jim, do you have anything that you want to comment on in open session now, or do you want to wait until? It's up to you. I think we provided an adequate synopsis of what's going on. It's complicated, guys.
Inasmuch as there could be some litigation surrounding this, I think it would be proper for closed session.
Thank you.
Session, but I would like to hold on, I'm just canceling my next, I'm trying to cancel my next meeting, sorry. I think it would be good though, Ms. Brad, if you had some maps, so when we get into there, I want the board not to just hear about this address or this address, but to actually see on a map that it's always helpful to me.
Yeah, so, okay. Does anybody else, I think we can probably let Roy's overview suffice at this point and then move through the rest of the agenda, and then we can revisit this briefly. My observations on this matter is that we're leading out on this effort. Honestly, to provide community service. What we're doing, in my mind, provides better, quicker access to sewer and actually addresses the problems of nitrates. Miranda's proposal essentially connects John Lewis and potentially Nordic into their existing system with ARPA grant money. Okay, that's the cost that the developer would otherwise pay on their own. But what we're proposing, and you guys have seen that, would be a trunk line that would ultimately, as secondary water became available, drive people's connections into an efficient sewer system. So we've got a better proposal. I really believe that to be true. So, Ron.
I thought Miranda did a superb job. She gave us a good briefing. It was well done. It was integrated. I think it kind of, she stole the march on us, because she basically took Nordic and wrapped it into her system. Bob, in a fit of, I don't know what kind of fit it was, but he said, why don't you take our sewage, you know, and that's coming down the mountain. And nothing was said. I was hoping, Jim, that you would push her and get an answer from Miranda, but you decided not to. But
I did mine behind the scene after.
Oh, this.
And that's how, really, if you want the truth of it, how I see trying to get us a little more ARPA money into our district. And so, I'll tell you right now. I even know we're in this meeting, but. If she's willing to take Osprey and Nordic, is it because the people at the top of the mountain, I'm sorry, but does your crap stink worse? I don't understand. Right?
You saw my follow-up note to her, and yeah. I think it would be ideal if they would take our stuff. It doesn't preclude us from still building our package plant and taking care of the north end of the valley in the future and the preserve. But if they could take it immediately and reuse the water, I think it would be good. But their plan, it revolves around the 90 acre feet lake that they want to build. And they want to use that they are asking for $2 million to do that, to build the dam essentially, and then recover all the water. So it was a good plan. I thought it was well thought out and it was well presented. So I didn't see the commissioners salivating, but they were, I think they were intrigued.
Okay, let's move on to something with a little more cheer. Carrie, The item number 8 related to save the date for Christmas party. Can everybody save that date?
Yeah, that's all I need to know. I need to get reservations now, and we had talked about the 3rd, but most of the places are filled up for the 3rd, so I've got a tentative for the 10th on Saturday. Is that going to coast with everybody?
It's going to have to if you want to go to the Christmas party.
Right?
Okay. Mark your calendars, folks. Bring your holiday cheer.
Jim?
Yeah.
Well, that, I'm getting, my sister's getting married on that day, and so I'll be unavailable on the 10th.
It's
right now the only day in the December. Don't hold out on me, but that's a big day. I've got family flying. She's actually flying in from Austin with a whole bunch of folks from LA. I'm not going to be able to leave. I'm just being real.
Yeah, well, Terry, why don't you see what we've got to have Jim.
No, you don't. No.
Okay, that was that. Does anybody else have any other business items, anything that's pressing, burning down the house if you want to open up right now? Hearing none, I'm going to move on to item F, request for motion to adjourn the public meeting for a closed strategy session to discuss the acquisition of real property, including any form of water right, and any pending or reasonably imminent litigation. Do I hear a motion?
Yes.
Okay. Second.
Second.
Okay.